This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Country Duty Show on CliffCentral.com. My name is Dumisole, and I'm in studio with...
Hi, guys. My name is Katlego. Welcome back to me.
Thank you. Clearly, I've lost touch. It's been a while, and I'm not sure where I am and what's happening. But worry not, I'll be back in motion and up and running.
It's good to have you back, man.
Thank you. How's your week been?
Oh, it was so exciting. It was really nice.
Okay.
So I went to go to do my bike lesson like I promised with Book Iboni during the week. It? And it was great. And I caught on really quick because I had such a great teacher. So thank you, Sizwe. I'm now a cyclist.
That's lovely. In fact, there's a project that I would like for us to consider and work together with Book Iboni. Yeah. I'll tell you all about it. It's, you know, from a WMC perspective, and I have the voucher and we'll go through it. But it's very interesting and it's lovely. And there's money there because it will go to the deserving cause for kids in particular. And given some of the initiatives that we do, I think it's worth it. And we've been talking about education and talking about empowering particularly the black child. And
yeah,
they just need this type of lift up. And I think if we put our heads together with some of my colleagues at WMC, we will definitely come up with something, because that's what Country Duty does.
Yeah. So as well, while we're still talking about projects that we're going to be doing, if you have nothing to do this weekend, this long weekend, Book Iboni is going to be having a ride a bike in color. It's called the Cycling in Color event. You can book by paying 100 rand per person, bring your own bicycle or donate a book or two and wear a white t-shirt. Or you can hire a bicycle from them at 80 Rand. And they're going to be taking down library names for people who, from the participants, on which library they know that needs the books that will be donated. And at the end, they will choose one of the libraries to benefit the books that have been donated to them. And the libraries will then go onto the database for the future. And it's an educational ride, 5 kilometers around Soweto. It's not a race. It's just a ride where people can go in. So 100 Rand. Book Iboni. They are based in Soweto Bay by Vilakazi Street.
Great stuff. I remember, I mean, it's quite a hot spot from a tourist destination and everything. And I think they're better placed. And it's important that we start balancing health and fun and doing it for a cause.
And education.
More importantly, exactly. And have you seen what recently has happened?
There's so many things that are recently
happening. And I'm just trying to think amongst other things. The first one relates to Duzani tweeting and saying that he's coming to clear his name.
He's coming back.
I can't wait. I think it's important that he comes through to clear his name, as he says, and obviously be arrested. Whether that will happen or not.
That's two contradictory things, though. Clear his name and be arrested.
Because he's a fugitive, you know. He's wanted, and it's necessary.
He says he's not a fugitive.
Of course, but time will tell. And then, what do you think insofar as the current state of affairs? Please send your WhatsApp messages or voice notes to 079-748-2090 and call us on studio on
0861-555-189.
Great stuff. I just saw one of the most disturbing tweets from Ed Lusufi. And this is two Afrikaner men, and I'm saying it deliberately so that the context is clear, went to the Department of Education offices. They had a sort of a prop up, you know, an image of a doll, and they hung it on the tree with Lusufi's face on it, and the t-shirt and stuff. And as far as he tweets, and you can check it out, at Lusufi says these guys came in to hang him. And it's clear as a result of some of the initiatives that he's been busy with that people are not happy. I find it very offensive. It's clear indication that it goes back to the days. I mean, you just have to do a Google search and see how black people were hung.
It's exactly that. Like back in the slavery days, that's how they used to call us to order as black people whenever we stepped out of their lines or out of their ways of doing things. And my gosh, like it's and anytime we do something that is that's actually advancing the black people, that's what happens. Like right now, Lusufi's come out to come and tell us about the the nuclear schools. Like, I love that project that they're on, and I'm really excited about it. And I hope that it's not just going to end goal the nuclear schools, because there's 100%. So many things. I was listening to him actually on Power FM this afternoon, and he was talking about how they're going to actually even do the automotive stuff. They're in discussion with BMW about having the automotive sector as well included. They're going to have agriculture. They're going to have IT. In Soweto, there's a school that they've already started with coding for IT specialists.
Lovely. Now that we talk about coding, there's a very interesting handle, and I know it's run by Lindy Weir and the crew. It's African Teen Gigs. I don't know if it's in conjunction with that, but this is a group of young, upcoming, especially black coders, and they're teaching young kids from disadvantaged families to code and do everything possible. And what we are seeing really is a change in so far as things have been done. Mm. We are out of your Benny and Betty type of things to being in the mainstream, and this is what it's about.
I'm excited about education now. I'm really excited about it. Like, there's so many things. Like, Lesufi does wonderful work, guys.
More importantly,
we have to give props where props are due.
Elijah, Honorable MEC, if you're listening, would like to have you on the show. We'll extend another invite for you to tell us about these beautiful initiatives, but we'll be in touch. But let's talk about, amongst other things, I mean, you spoke about that picture and those two Afrikaner men.
Yeah, I'm going to be retweeting it right now for the people who haven't seen it.
Please do. But it talks to the current state of affairs, be it, you know, racial attitudes or feelings and stigma, whatever you call it or you want to think about it. And I think in 2017 and 18, especially towards late 2017, most of these racial incidents have actually taken a toll, and racists are out there in full swing, and they basically daring. No, of course, they're saying, "Do what you have to do, and let's see what you can do to us." One would have thought that the Vicky Momberg outcome may well deter people, but it seems like it won't.
It seems like it gave them more power, ne?
100%.
Like, they're daring us.
Absolutely. And it's very unfortunate.
Take
but
on the dare.
Given that, there have been some legislative, you know, amendments and considerations dealing with the likes of hate speech, curbing racism, and all of that. And in the studio today, we have an attorney and a good friend of mine, and a friend of Country Duty, who's really been on it 24/7 and the likes, and has done extensive work. She's an attorney specializing in telecoms and media, dealt with various regulatory issues on media and composition. Anything that you could think of from your Saudi days where it was hectic and inclusion of things. But I won't really go into detail other than say, welcome to Lana.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to finally be on hashtag Country Duty, signing in.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for really coming through and coming to talk to us about this. But before we get into details, what do you think the current state of play is? And insofar, it's twofold. Firstly, with the new dawn, are you seeing it? Do you think there's progress being made?
The new what?
It's called dawn.
Yeah, I don't know if dawn would be the correct adjective to use, because there's a lot that still needs to be done. So let's see. Let's give it time. In terms of the current state of affairs, it's quite tense, and I think it's been tense for some time now. We've seen with various crimes that have been propagated against members of our communities, some of the sentiments that have been expressed on social media and in the media itself. So I think there is a lot of racial tension. Is it anything new? No, it's not. But I think there have been certain incidents that have served as catalysts that have brought these issues to the fore. And I think that's why we've had some of the regulatory and policy responses that we have in trying to address some of these issues. One of them being, as we have now, the Prevention of Hate Crimes and Hate Speech Bill, which we'll be considering. But there are others, of course. You know, you have the Fulman Publication Amendment Bill that itself is seeking to address some issues pertaining to content regulation, as I'd like to identify it.
Great stuff. And I, as I said earlier, I agree that these incidents have really just taken a toll, and it's something that should be dealt with. I'm not sure though that such things could be policed, you know, if you know what I mean. Legislative, whereas it's more of an attitude type of thing. But let's get into it. Tweeps, as we said, please tag us on at countrygtza, at Dumisole, at Handful underscore K, at Tulwana
86.
Exactly. 86. and let's talk about your recent experiences.
Hashtag.
Of course.
Hashtag.
Country duty. And also tag at cliffcentral.com so that we could see your tweets and engage with them. Our studio number is 0861-555-189. I got it right, ne?
Well done.
Nah, I'm getting the hang of things.
Number 0797482090. So, like you said, that it can that the hate speech or the anger cannot be policed now. And somebody once asked a question that if it could be policed back in before 1994, why can it not be policed now? Why can it not be something that is a law that you can't you. Do you understand what I mean? Like the reverse of it. Why can it not be institutionalized?
I hear you. And that's one of the things that we would obviously consider and discuss. But Tulwana, as I said, you've done substantial work insofar as all these things, and be it legislative or otherwise. But what is this bill? You know, I saw it was a hullabaloo on Twitter the other day, and people talking about it infringing on human rights and freedom of expression. But for someone who is not a lawyer, someone who's listening to the show, or probably listen via podcast later, and says, I see this country duty and hate speech bill. What are you guys talking about? If you were to just define what, you know, this hate speech bill is, and what is hate speech amongst other things, and then we can talk about what the bill intends to achieve.
So just to give an introduction on the bill itself and just give a bit of history to it, the Department of Justice first introduced it in 2016.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of concern that was raised around it. Basically, what it aims to do is to address what it defines as hate speech and it defines as hate crimes.
Yeah.
There've been a lot of xenophobic attacks that we've seen. There've been a lot of racial remarks you may recall with the Penny Sparrow tweets, and that was propagated against a very specific sector of our community.
Yeah.
And so it was really in response to some of those incidents that the department then formulated the hate speech bill. So basically what it's saying is if you were to commit, if you were to propagate what they define as hate speech, you are ultimately committing an offense. If you were to commit a hate crime, you are ultimately committing an offense. And the way it goes about it is with reference to the hate crime. If it's a crime that is perpetuated or perpetrated against an individual based on the specific grounds that are listed in the legislation, so if it's because a person is an albino, if it's because, like, corrective rape, for example, you know, it's against a very, very specified sector of our community, then that would constitute a hate crime as opposed to a normal crime as you'd have under the Criminal Procedure Act.
Of course, so like your theft.
It looks at the motive, and is it motivated by particular elements of prejudice, and then it lists those particular grounds. Similarly, again, with hate speech, you know, is there an element of prejudice? Is there an element to intentionally do harm unto an individual based on those specific grounds, whether it's ethnic, religion, HIV status? It even indicates that if it's based on one's HIV status, for example. So it lists a lot of those grounds. The main concern, as you have always noted, is...
Sorry to interrupt, and before we get into the concern, do you think this has been publicized properly? And talk about publication in this instance is, do you think there's been a drive to at least let people know that there's this type of legislation, it's coming, and people need to be wary of these type of things?
For the ordinary person on the street, I would say no. I came to know of it because of the work that I do as far as media and policy legislation is concerned. But I think it goes back to the issue of... first of all, trying to assess whether legislation would be the most appropriate way, given the nature of the issue that we're dealing with. You know, we're dealing with a very soft societal issue. So would it really be something that we want to legislate. Yeah. And so I think even with the department, the approach was, you know, engaging people who are very active in the media field. So engaging your media distributors, engaging other regulators. And there was a lot of conversation on those platforms or through those platforms. Mm-hmm. There were civil society organizations involved. But I wouldn't say there was anything like a national roadshow where I've seen some departments actually go provincially. 100%. Like the Road Accident Fund, for example, they're very, very visible with some of their campaigns.
Yeah.
I haven't seen something similar as far as the hate speech and hate crimes bill is concerned.
I mean, and one would think that would be necessary, given the consequences, which we'll get to a bit later, that you want to have, you know, a proper roadshow, at least even an advert of some sort, you know, in a language or otherwise.
Especially because it's something that would affect literally every single citizen, if you're thinking about it. The minute you're talking about anything that curtails the freedom of speech, for instance, it affects every single individual. And it's very important then that you educate and there's some sort of awareness as far as these kind of developments and interventions are concerned.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes the issue of, well, I didn't know. But we all know, you know, ignorance of the law, is it an offense? Last time I checked in my law books, it's not. I don't know if there have been any developments.
Yeah. Sutlan, I wanted to ask, you said that there were... They were a bit hesitant about legislating this because they didn't know, because of the sensitivity of
No. What I was saying is I don't think legislating it is the most appropriate way to deal with what the hate speech bill seeks to address.
Oh, okay.
And I don't say that lightly. It's in light of what's already there. So you have your constitution, for example, that has your section 16, that is your freedom of expression clause. You then also have your section 9 that speaks to the right of equality and issues pertaining to discrimination and the grounds on which one can and cannot discriminate.
Yeah.
You also have your protection of equality, your Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act. Mm-hmm. You've got your Human Rights Commission. You've got your gender equality. So with all of those institutions and legislation and policies in place, is there a need for an additional piece of legislation?
Yes, there is.
Why do you think so?
Pray to motivate.
I mean, because we're living in a society where we have to tell people that doom or spraying somebody with doom.
Mm.
Like, we have gotten to a point where our people are so... I don't want to use ignorant, but they're so careless with important or dangerous things that they just use them carelessly as however which they want to. So it's almost like a child, you know, you can't just let them go and explore. Now you need to now guide them that, no, this is wrong, this is right. That's just where we are. And I think it's probably because we're still trying to find our own footing ourselves to finding equality.
Yeah,
and I use that word very loosely.
No,
we're trying to find footing in ourselves. So even you need to, we're still at the point where we need to educate people, even on the most, common stuff, like the most common sense stuff, like, you know, common sense. The most, what is that popular phrase? Common sense is not common to everyone.
It's not common to everyone.
Some things that we overlook and we just think, yeah, but you should know, you know, like you don't necessarily.
But I like your choice of words when you said educate. There's a very big difference as far as raising awareness and educating people with the objective of trying to promote social cohesion versus legislating. Because when you legislate something, you're just saying it's illegal, but it does not necessarily address or change the status quo. You know, at one of the workshops that I was attending, somebody said, well, what you're essentially going to do is drive these extremist groups underground.
Yes.
Already you have some areas in the country that are habited by only a specific population.
I mean, there's Orania.
It's exactly, you know, it's a state within a state, you know. So when you put policies and legislation in place and you're trying to address social ills, you're trying to address things that manifest as a result of socioeconomic circumstances, think about whether that will actually achieve the desired result. Is it proportional? Is it necessary at the end of the day? Especially because from where I stand, I don't think that we have completely exhausted the instruments that we have at our disposal. So do enough people know that you've got your Human Rights Commission as a recourse?
Yes.
And would adding another piece of legislation necessarily increase awareness? I don't think so. You know, so I think there has to be more of an emphasis on educating and raising awareness that this is a certain racism is unacceptable. Xenophobia is unacceptable. Any sort of discrimination is unacceptable. And when it does happen, call it out. I think the Vicky Mumber case actually has almost started that. It's ignited that, because also, you know, you have to look at it also from an implementation point of view. Is the judiciary itself educated enough? Is SAPS educated enough? If I was to come as somebody from the LGBTI community and want to report something, how would the police on the other side of the desk respond to me? How would he actually take my case? Would he ridicule me? Would he send me away? Even though I've got I've got a constitutional right.
Yes.
Do you see? So that for me is the major challenge that I have with the bill, other than the drafting and some of the terminology that's used in the bill itself. The question is, will another piece of legislation address the social ills, the socio-economic ills that we face?
What do you suggest? How do you suggest we go about it? I mean, outside of the fact that we black people are always out here complaining or crying or raising awareness to the fact that, listen, when you ask me a question like, this is one of my favorite questions that I've ever been asked. Do you speak to dead people? You know, those are the kind of things outside of the fact that us as black people now have to individually go up to people and say, listen, when you speak to me like that, when you tell me that I speak so well, when you tell me that I don't sound black, when you tell me that those kind of so-called compliments, that those kind of things are unacceptable. Outside of us individually, each time, every single time it happens to me or it happens to somebody, and now they have to go up to a person and say, you don't say that. How else do we do it nationwide? Because now that what you're saying is that, and okay, I hear your point, and it's a fair and valid point, actually, because especially considering that implementation of anything in South Africa is so poor. Then how do we as South Africans implement it in our daily lives on the streets and make sure that there's less of hate and anger going on?
If I may, you know, most of the stuff that we're talking about relates to, as I said, your prejudices. These are individualistic type of thing. I mean, hate is specific to a person and a race and stuff like that. But maybe before we then get into, you mentioned some categories, and I'd like for you just to point out those categories. And then let's look at the practical aspect of it and what do those include and the reach. One of the things that after the smaller music break that I would like for us to look at is, you know, who is targeted insofar as this bill? Is it going to be white people? Is it going to be black people? Is it going to be everyone or corporates or otherwise? But let's do that.
This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome back to the Country Duty Show on CliffCentral.com. And thanks for joining us. We're talking about the recent hate speech bill that's been gazetted and is being considered by Parliament. We are seeing your tweets, and thanks for sending them through insofar as a link at Clarence FDB. Thanks for your tweets. We know that you always listen to the show. We may not agree, but that's the whole point of Country Duty and having a debate, and it's necessary for us to consider each and everyone's view. Yeah, just before we took a musical break, we spoke about the bill and the lack of, I'd say, advertising or informing people as to what this thing is and what it would mean or a drive towards that. But let's look at, you spoke about categories, as we pointed out, and those listed grounds. Do you perhaps just want to run through those, and then we then get in as to really what the potential consequences are and what will it mean for a man on the street? Are there any exceptions for that matter?
The first aspect that I'll just take the listeners through as well, is the grounds as far as hate crimes is concerned.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, any crime that is motivated or there's a prejudice in relation to one's age, albinism, birth, color, culture, disability, ethnic or social origin, gender or gender identity, HIV status, language, nationality, migrant or refugee status, interestingly enough, occupation or trade. I will let the people just take that in.
Yeah.
Political affiliation or conviction, race, religion, sex, which includes intersex or sexual orientation. Some of these are already easily identifiable or reconcilable to the Constitution. You would note that Section 9 of the Constitution also lists the grounds upon which one cannot be discriminated. And then Section 16 of the Constitution, which talks about the freedom of expression, it also talks about those grounds as far as the Constitution's definition of hate speech. So that's with relation to hate crime.
Sure.
So any crime that is perpetuated based on a prejudice on any of those listed grounds then would constitute, for purposes of this bill, a hate crime.
Yeah.
Then you've then got hate speech that's also got its own list that pretty much mirrors the list as far as hate crime is concerned. The challenge has always been you've got the promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act that's got its own grounds. You've got the Constitution in Section 16(2) that really limits the grounds as far as hate speech is concerned.
Yeah.
Then you've got what you have currently in the bill, and trying to reconcile that, you've got other pieces of legislation as well. And trying to then reconcile that becomes very difficult. You asked about exceptions. In the first draft of the bill, there were no exceptions. And that is where your South African media industry was most concerned. Because ultimately, when it came to issues of public interest, there was no exception as far as that's concerned. If it was a work that had any dramatic or artistic merit, what about freedom of expression versus freedom of the media, and how do you balance the two?
Yeah.
So fortunately, when the bill was revised by the department, they did take that into consideration. So on the face of it, there are exceptions, but I think the exceptions themselves still needs to be fine-tuned simply because of the wording of it. So as far as artistic or dramatic merit is concerned, there is somewhat of an exception. But it the way that it's drafted is it's almost like it cancels out the exception that it purports to bring in.
Indeed.
So just to read it out for you quickly, as far as the exception with regard to artistic and creativity is concerned. So any bona fide artistic creativity, performance or other form of expression, to the extent that such creativity, performance or expression does not advocate hatred that constitute incitement to cause harm, based on the grounds that I listed. So for me, I then just tried to think, how would this actually play out, especially when you have other institutions such as the Film and Publication Act, the Film and Publication Board, whose job is to really then try and regulate content and assign the appropriate age rating. So for instance, you might very well have an instance where the Film and Publication Board would assign an artistic piece a particular rating, but that very type rating of thing.
And I know you're avoiding,
let's not go there,
but this is what it is. But yeah.
So you'd have one institution, you know, giving, assigning a particular piece of dramatic art, a age category, but then you might have that very same piece of artistic work being caught by the hate speech and hate crimes bill. Then what do you do when you've literally got two pieces of legislation pronouncing very differently on the same piece of work? And those are the, exactly, so those are some of the considerations that the department, together with Parliament right now, really has to see how do they align the current pieces of legislation. So even the definition in the Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act as far as hate speech is concerned is quite different from the one that's introduced in the bill. And the act says if there are any conflicts between itself and any other legislation, then the Promotion of Equality Act would prevail. Exactly. So there has to be that alignment, and it's something that we always try and sensitize Parliament and government and the legislature as a whole to, just so that there's regulatory certainty, because it also has an impact as far as investment in the creative sector as well as the media sector is concerned.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. It's very interesting. Surely one of the things that people should have done is to look at what we currently have and then work from there instead of going through and legislating and spending money on creating new law.
I agree. And I think some of the challenge is also when you have new things developing in society, new phenomenons that don't seem to be readily addressed in legislation. So yes, the other challenge is really how do we keep legislation in line with what's happening in society? 100%. So for instance, LGBTI has become a big issue as far as some of the discrimination that they themselves suffer. You know, yes, you've got the increase in corrective rape.
Yes.
Then you've got the whole target against albinos because of all sorts of beliefs, and now they're really being targeted.
Yeah.
And so what happens when a few years down the line, you've got some form of discrimination or targeting of a particular group, but that's not easily reconcilable to some of the laws that we have. So I think that's really the other reality, that, you know, we also as a country sign up to various international instruments and conventions and ratify them, and they then have to be translated into domestic policies and legislation. And how do you reconcile that with some of the current legislation that we have? And I think what's happening with Section 25 of the Constitution is really exactly that, where we are saying, yes, we've got this piece of instrument. Yes, we've got the supremacy of the Constitution,
yes,
but we've got other socio-economic issues that we have to address. So I think that's also the reality of it, is where you have to reflect and say, how relevant are some of the laws in the society that we find ourselves in?
Yeah.
But I think that's probably why we have to keep looking at them or reviewing them every time they come. These issues come up. Some of these things we can't preempt or we can't see into, you know, because it's things that, I don't know, that we ourselves are still learning as well. It's like a whole learning curve. Like, sure, in 5 years' time, there's going to be another issue that's going to come up, and we're going to have to go and relook at everything, because it's going to now be discriminating against a certain kind of, a certain group of people, or a certain classified group of people. Yeah, so I think the inclusion of people and the going out to the streets and talking to people would have probably captured a couple of other things that might have fallen through the net when this was being drafted.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right, Ashi, because those things would have to be considered. But my concern really relates to always trying to legislate certain things that develop. You know, there's going to be an outbreak or a racist or otherwise. Are you then going to run back to Parliament or propose a bill and try and deal with that? You know,
but that's why it's for the people, right? It's for the people. It's because you have to admit there's something. That's why they say it's two heads are better than one, because sometimes one person is only going to be looking at an issue that affects them right now or that affects somebody around them, and somewhere somehow along the line somebody they know would know somebody that will be affected by something that has never crossed their mind, that they would have never thought of. So including more people in discussions, I guess. Like, for example, with the land debate, right? The submissions process.
Mm.
That's probably where you're going to be capturing things that, or finding things that you yourself or me, myself, would never have thought of. One of the first things that we spoke about last week, for example, as well, was the Khoisan and where they stand on the land reform and stuff. And I bet money that government, when Zuma came out tested last year and said we're going to do land redistribution, he did not think about that. That only came in now this year when the Khoisan people came out to say, yeah, but you guys, you know, same thing with the constitution when it was first redrafted. The same people said that they were not consulted on when it came in. So like the traditional leaders bill, they have their own thing. The Khoisan weren't given that kind of opportunity because people were only thinking with blinds on. You need to now take those off and allow. I know it might delay the process at the end of the day, but then I think if we do that, we might then reduce bill after legislation after legislation after legislation that keeps coming up.
And I hear you. And isn't it one of the things, especially on the land issue, that's been considered to say to them, come make your representations and hear them out. Okay. But what I found interesting, however, when you speak about the Khoisan and stuff, they've actually now joined hands with AfriForum. I don't know if you've seen that.
I heard.
Yeah. And it's very, listen,
but look, they're still in discussions. Can I just say they're still in because I mean, remember we said
discussions with AfriForum? No,
yeah, how I get it. It's why are you discriminating? We started from they started these discussions the bill from the 22nd until the 27th. I'm not saying anything until the 27th because only on the 27th will we know where they stand. I mean, EFF was also talking to ANC, so.
I'll let you know, but I have my reasons. In fact, I just saw a tweet now insofar as it's a Barclays studies that was done, I think stats of some sort. I will try and find it. But what it talks about the land ownership and the numbers. I hope I haven't refreshed as much.
You got to remember AfriForum members are mostly the members who are holding onto the land.
But this
and
is
the constitution or the thing that's holding back the reform is the fact that there must be a willing seller. There are no willing sellers. So if you're in discussions with AfriForum, you are trying to find that balance, are you not?
To
close that gap where there's no willing seller.
No,
are you not?
But you see, let's maybe not digress and speak about land and AfriForum. But other than say,
It's a hot subject.
Can I get in though, in relation to this proposed hate speech bill?
Mm.
If black people, insofar as legislation and how the bill is crafted, were to stand up like they're doing now and calling for land, and surely it becomes a topical issue and to a certain extent offensive to the likes of AfriForum or a white person or otherwise, insofar as that bill is concerned and how I read it, you know, it's going to deal with a particular race, which happens to be a black person talking to white people and saying, I would like to have land, or you took my land, and stuff like that. Surely, insofar as it is, it means an aggrieved white person could look at this and say, listen, you're offending me. You're targeting a particular race. You're saying all these hateful things, and that's hate speech. And therefore, you know, you could lay a criminal charge and arrest it. Is that how things are? And if we tie it with the land discussion, do you see it that way?
So in order for speech to constitute hate speech, in terms of the bill, it has to be harmful. There has to be a clear intention for that to be harmful, or promote or propagate hatred. So ultimately, the onus would be on the aggrieved party to say that, you know, this particular individual speech is harmful, or they're inciting harm, or promoting or propagating hatred. This is quite different, though, from the definition that you have in the Constitution, because the Constitution says there must be advocacy for hatred on very narrowly defined grounds, namely race, ethnicity, gender, and religion. And over and above that advocacy to promote hatred, there has to be incitement to cause harm. So it's a two-pronged test. The bill takes a bit of a different approach, and it's no longer a two-pronged test. Is it insightful? Is it does it incite any harm? Is it harmful? Does it propagate hatred? So those are some of the considerations that, for instance, if it was to go to the Human Rights Commission or if it was to go to court, that the presiding officer would have to try and consider. You know, with crimes, there are always elements that you have to prove. For murder, there are very specific elements that you have to prove. So as far as hate speech is concerned, there has to be that intention to be harmful, to incite, to promote or propagate hatred.
Yeah.
So they can get away with, I didn't intend to.
Of course. As an exception, I think. I don't know, Tulana, your views.
But I think you can say that, but at the end of the day, you would have to assess the case and say, you'd have to look at it within the wider context of what's going on in society. You have to look at the current state of affairs. You have to look at the wider context. And I suppose it's easier with a hate crime versus hate speech sometimes, because with your hate crimes, for example, there'd be a specific individual that would be harmed. There would be property of belonging to a specific group of people,
yeah,
that would be vandalized, as you've had with your xenophobic attacks. Yes. And so you'd have to look at the wider context as far as speech is concerned that is directed to a particular individual. And interestingly enough, the victim of hate speech or hate crime can now even include an institution. So it's gone beyond just a natural person or group of persons, but also a juristic person can actually now start claiming.
Brands and your companies and
exactly.
Stuff.
And where's the rationale in that? Yeah. How practical is it? I've been trying to think about an example or a situation where a corporate entity would then go and lay a charge for hate speech or hate crime.
Well, maybe if you go out and you say, if you call them out for their nonsense, for example, a certain auditing company could probably come out and call us and say that us calling them incompetent could be hate speech.
But in any event, surely that will be determined on an objective basis,
yes,
and you need to then look at you know, the intent and stuff.
Yes.
But having said that, for example, I mean, you guys probably have saw the UCT tweet yesterday on the timeline where they said, let's discuss black people and what is it that they like. I don't know. I'm just paraphrasing.
No, they said that black people don't deserve nice things,
yes,
in sight of. Did you not see it? Ooh, girl.
That's the tweet.
Said they forgot to put the inverted commas in. Imagine.
Yes. But now, on those bases, amongst other things, that's obviously hateful because it takes away or doesn't even consider the historical aspects of it. It has connotations that are unpleasant and otherwise. And on your point regarding corporates and stuff like that, one surely could say, if this bill is passed, go to a police station to say, you know, does that mean they at UCT News Radio, for example, who was tweeting, because that's the account, link it with UCT as an institution, and therefore say, we've been offended, that was hate speech and stuff like that. But then it raises the issues of floodgates,
yes,
at the end of the day.
Yes.
And now the question is, how are we going to curtail those floodgates?
Exactly. And it goes back to the point that I was raising earlier, is what are we trying to address?
Yeah.
We're trying to address socioeconomic issues. We're trying to promote social cohesion. And is litigating, do we even have the capacity? So do we want to overstretch? And is litigation, to begin with, the correct way of going about it? Surely there has to be a distinction as far as when you can and cannot litigate. When do you take it to a criminal court? When are there different kind of sanctions? And that's why you have your equality courts versus your criminal courts. And then just start assessing and seeing what is the most appropriate way. Because at the end of the day, like you just said to me,
yeah,
it's going to be floodgates. And then there is whether the judiciary itself or SAPS are capacitated to even begin to appreciate,
yeah,
that there is such a thing as hate speech, that there is such a thing as a hate crime, and actually give it the attention that it's due. So it's a very broad issue, and
yeah,
it's something that cannot be only on government's shoulders alone to address through policies or legislation. It's things that through platforms such as social media, you call them out, you show that there is no tolerance at all for this kind of behavior.
Indeed.
For this kind of speech, particularly in light of the history of South Africa and where we are trying to go as a nation. It has to be a much broader response than just legislating and saying you are committing an offense if you say 1, 2, 3, especially like something like speech as,
yeah,
well. So who's going to now come and implement it in my house,
yeah,
when you and I are engaging on WhatsApp, you
100%.
Know, and will it change my perception? So the fact that it's illegal, will it change my perception if I've got a prejudice against you?
Absolutely
no,
not.
It won't.
Yeah.
And yet what we're trying to address, what we're trying to promote and advance, is social cohesion.
Indeed. I mean, these are very topical and serious issues that you really can't, in my view, legislate and basically push it and move with it. Our WhatsApp line is 079-748-2090. Tibiso sent a WhatsApp and he says, I've just heard now that the Khoisan leaders claiming to be the first citizens joined forces with AfriForum. There are no surprises there. That's why they even thought it appropriate to define themselves outside of the black people of SA. Worrying indeed. You know, this is a view, and it talks to so many historical issues about how people perceive themselves and you know, to a certain extent, who they want to identify themselves with. I think they're at liberty to do so. Whether there'll be a proper outcome or something that will make them satisfied is yet to be seen. I'm wondering if they'll be joining AfriForum on the international campaign regarding the land issue. I doubt. But it's a relationship, in my view, of inconvenience, but let's give it some time. Coming back to what we're discussing, normally, legislation like the Criminal Procedure Act and the likes would propose certain sanctions. On this instance, what is it that we're looking at, and what would be a worst case scenario if Dumi, for example, who sometimes is vocal and talks about this and gets charged with this, what is it likely he may face in court?
So we're looking at sanctions such as imprisonment. We're looking at sanctions such as declaration of one being declared as a habitual criminal. We're also looking at fines, corrective supervision.
Yeah.
And again, so you pay a certain amount. Will it change the issue?
Yeah.
It might dent you. Will it change you? It might dent your pocket. And I'm not saying that there's not a place for sanctions. I'm not saying that there's not a place for legislation. But you really have to then assess, is it necessary? The means that your institution is instituting, are they proportional? Will they actually help you meet the objectives? But just to answer your question to me, those are some of the sanctions that you have. I mean, Penny Sparrow was 150,000 rand, I think, that the Equality Court had fined her.
Yes.
We now have with Vicky 3 years. And so there has been that cross-reference with the Criminal Procedure Act as far as contravention with this particular piece of legislation is concerned. But perhaps we do need the baton on some of these issues, you know, because as people see that there are very real consequences to calling somebody a kafir, for example, to just, you know, subjecting a person to degrading conditions simply because of their affiliation with a particular group or belonging to a particular sector of our community. You definitely need that. But what about those particular cases that happen and they don't make it to court?
Indeed.
How do we address all? And I believe that you'd have more that don't make it to court than those that do. And that is why I say the response to it has to be much, much wider. It has to be beyond just policy and legislation.
100%. I mean, for me, what it also says is, as you correctly pointed out now, we have to have these conversations. We have to see to it that people are talking. I'm just worried that we're going to find most people in jail, and it's going to, amongst other things, given the floodgates now, really not, you know, do what it's required to do. People will be in jails. Jails are already flooded. But it still won't strike to the core. And the core really here is people's attitudes and perceptions. That is very difficult to policy and ensure that, that there's compliance. And, you know, I think more work needs to be put in.
And not to throw the baby out with the bathwater, I mean, there are positive elements to the bill in that there has to be, it's actually made provision for there being educational and awareness programs, especially by the South African Human Rights Commission, as well as the Gender Equality Commission, as well as also the judiciary, ensuring that the judiciary is well educated and equipped to be able to handle some of these issues. I believe that it has to also be extended to the SAPS, because before a matter is heard in court, you actually start off by opening a case at the 100%. Police station. So we also need to start sensitizing and changing the perceptions of some of the police people out there. I mean, just not to digress, but it was just like some of the issues that we've been seeing about crimes, if I can speak about it like that are committed online. You know, and people complaining about identity theft on Facebook.
Indeed.
Or people perpetuating certain things on Facebook, and you go to a police station and the police just does not really understand, okay, so where's Facebook? Because you're talking about something that was committed on a social media platform. You know,
Indeed.
and that was a big, big challenge. And then it was realized that there has to be a lot of education and awareness as far as digital literacy of the police themselves, you know, so that they even understand how do you collect evidence, how do you put it together in a docket, how do you then ensure that you process it well for purposes of a successful prosecution. And so in the same way, as far as successful implementation of the bill is concerned, there also has to be that empowerment, if I can put it like that, on the part of our law enforcement to ensure that they are well capacitated. Because one of the things that the bill also mandates the department to do is to report to cabinet on the implementation of the bill, and that would speak to successful prosecution. That would speak to how many cases have been reported, of those reported cases, how many were prosecuted, what was the outcome, so that we see whether it's being effectively implemented.
No, I think, I mean, we could talk about this for the longest of time and ensure that we raise awareness. But we will continue with the discussions on hashtag Country Duty, the hate speech bill. Do tag us at Dumisole, at handful underscore K, at Tulwana 86. I got it right, ne?
Yes, 86, the numerals, 86. Yes.
And at Country Duty ZA. Tulwana, it was really lovely to have you on our show. And I'm hoping that it's been, you know, informative and engaging. The tweets won't stop, that much I can tell you. And you'd have to catch up, retweet, and respond. And yeah.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. And what I like, though, is let's have these conversations at the end of the day, because it was just like when the whole eTOL thing came up, a huge sector of our public said, I was never informed. I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And it's important that as ordinary citizens that we participate in some of these processes, because at the end of the day, they will have a bearing on us. So let's keep the conversation going. Let's engage and engage with the objective of ensuring that we do so. You know, there's critique and then there's criticism. Let's try and build. Let's try and advance social cohesion at the end of the day.
Yeah. Great stuff. Lovely way to conclude.
Awesome.
There's an important announcement.
Yeah. In line with speaking about people being included in legislations that's been taking place, the restitution bill, the review for Section 25 of the Constitution submissions has been put up by the department. The closing date for written submissions and requests for oral representation is Thursday, 31st of May, 2018. All inquiries as well as written submissions can be addressed to Ms. Pat Jaya. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. You can send it via post to PO Box, Committee Section PO Box 15, Cape Town 800, or email pjayia at parliament.co.za. General guidelines for having the writing the submissions is that the most important thing is to give concrete examples of your problems and in your area and how the bill would affect the underlying problems. And it's best to just write in the most comfortable language that you can, right from the heart. There's formatting guidelines that have also been put up. I'm going to tweet the link to this guideline that gives of on how to write the submissions for the bill. And then you guys can just check it out on Country Duty ZA or at my hand on my handful. I'm sure Dumi will also retweet it, and then you can get it there. And let's just do our best to also have our voices heard in regards to the land reform.
And it's time. That was the Country Duty show on cliffcentral.com. Do join us next week. Watch out for tweets and announcement, and thanks for being part of it.
This is cliffcentral.com.